Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. My guests in the studio today, we are doing a smoke-free edition today, as KRVS always is, smoke-free in the University of Louisiana at Lafayette here at Cypress Lake Studios. But my guest in the studio today, Renee Stansberry, is the regional director for Louisiana Campaign for Tobacco-Free Living and is involved in so much in making our area and the area all surrounding us such a much better, healthier place to live. And Kathy Richard, who, people have artists, especially in this area, have been real involved with Kathy for a long time, whether it was when she was a full-time artist, which a lot of folks don't know that, who are connected with her through healthcare, but what she does for healthcare for artists and healthcare for musicians through the Louisiana Cultural Economy Foundation, and also does so many programs together with the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Living. So welcome, you two.
Thank you. Thank you for having
How's
us.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's great to have you here. First off, I want to talk about, if we'll just mention briefly, because we're going to talk about it a little bit later in the show, but tonight is a big night for the Lafayette area. Could you just talk briefly about what's going to be happening so people are aware of that in case they have to get back to work during our first half hour here?
Sure. Tonight at 5:30 at the Lafayette Consolidated Government Building, the Lafayette City Council will be voting on a smoke-free ordinance for Lafayette city limits as well as the unincorporated areas of the parish.
That's a big deal.
It's a very big deal.
And that happened recently for you all. You were involved in moving that forward in the city of New Orleans.
Yes, we were part of that team who worked to move that ordinance through. There was a team. It was a collaborated effort with a lot of national partners.
Yeah, okay. Very nice. So, and that starts, do you know what time the meeting starts tonight?
5:30.
At 5:30, and that's at Lafayette Consolidated Government.
Yes, ma'am.
And so you'd like everybody who would like to be there to support what the efforts have been to be there and show their faces.
Absolutely. It's located at 705 West University Avenue.
Very cool. Right on the corner.
Right on the corner. That's right. Right across from the Circle K.
All right. Very nice. Well, Renee, you, the state of Louisiana, is that home for you?
Originally. That's,
yeah.
My roots is in Louisiana, although I did migrate north for a little while.
Where were you born?
Kind of a little town by New Roads. It's called Bush.
In Bush, Louisiana.
Not too many people know that. Yeah. I think we had four streets in the whole town.
Yeah. And then your family moved around?
My dad was an electrician. Well, he still is.
Sure.
But, you know, when work decreased, we moved around. We've lived in Florida for a little while, and we migrated north to New Jersey.
Okay.
And so once I started school, middle school, high school, played ball, my dad didn't want to move me, so stayed there till I graduated. And then.
Oh, so a lot of your growing up was in New Jersey?
Yes.
Yeah, what town were you in up there?
It's Sea Corcus.
Sea Corcus.
Mm-hmm. It's right by Jersey City, right across the Lincoln Tunnel from New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What an interesting place,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you go back to – I mean, do you still have friends or family or anybody up there?
Just really my friends. When we left, my whole family left.
Yeah.
And so I still have a best friend and my friends. In fact, now that we're both grown with children, we try to vacation together somewheres in the United States. We pick a different state each year, and so we get to vacation together. So
very nice.
I go back every now and then.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So you came back to Louisiana –
For college.
For college. Where did you go to school?
At UL. Well, back then it was USL.
So you're a graduate of USL.
I am a graduate.
Very nice.
I say I went to two colleges because I started in USL, but then I graduated in ULL.
Very cool.
So
it's always nice to have graduates on here.
Yep.
So what did you pursue in school?
Health and wellness.
Ah, okay.
So definitely
so
working
you're sticking
in my field.
True to. Very nice.
Yes.
And I'm curious with where you work right now for Tobacco-Free Living. What was the? How did you get involved with that program?
That's a good question. I've worked at a lot of jobs, as you can imagine, out of school. I think a lot of college graduates bounce from job to job before they find their niche I guess you could say. I've worked for a lot of the wellness centers here in town at the hospitals.
Oh, okay.
And worked for an agency called Southwest Louisiana AHEC when I was a student. We did an internship over at their agency and worked in medication assistance for the needy or the uninsured. I've worked in pharmaceutical for that. So I worked in a variety of different programs, and then a position came available in tobacco control and prevention. And, like, it was a perfect fit with my degree and my interest. And so about 9 years ago is when I got started in tobacco control and prevention, working with youth in schools, high school, doing presentations, working with local municipalities, working with hospitals, school systems, you name it. I've pretty much have done it. And then I am certified as a cessation specialist.
Okay.
So I do cessation counseling to help people quit as well. So whole variety. And I started with the Louisiana Campaign for Tobacco-Free Living back in August.
Okay.
So this August, they'll make a year that I'll be with this agency.
Well, you know, I'm curious, in this past 9 years that your focus has kind of been on the tobacco and the tobacco-free living and cessation, have you seen changes? Have you seen, and good or bad, or, you know, what's the evolution that you've seen happen with tobacco use?
Absolutely. There is such a momentum going right now, and I contribute it to the pioneers who came before me and their efforts. You know, I've worked with the Department of Health and Hospitals through their initiatives, CDC, all of these partners, and I think investing the resources into the state has really created this momentum moving forward with policies and really changing that social norm around tobacco and cigarettes and the way that we perceive it, our perception of it. A lot more education has been done. You know, this younger generation that's coming up after us, they've had a lot of opportunities that we haven't as far as in tobacco control and prevention. And they're much more knowledgeable about it because I think there's more information through the science and the studies that have been done over the years. And actually, the Legacy Campaign is doing Let's Finish It, talking about let's finish the fight against tobacco with this new generation by raising up tobacco-free generation.
Yeah.
And by doing that, we'll end the epidemic that tobacco is causing. I mean, when you look at it and you're talking about 440,000 deaths each year, that's 1,200 people per day who die directly in relation to their tobacco use. That's not, you know, secondhand smoke exposure, none of that. And so really, this new generation coming up has an opportunity to end the epidemic of tobacco. But we have to watch out for new products and things that the industry put out there.
Okay.
Doesn't make it any healthier. It's just a new avenue for them to make a revenue.
Okay, yeah. And we'll come back and talk about some of that.
Sure.
But what it sounds like interesting is that it's gone from this, you know, really, if you want to look at it as a grassroots movement, you know, people really looking at, like, I don't know that this is such a good thing, to now you have legislation involved. You have, I mean, there's actual employment, there's jobs.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's
definitely
interesting to see.
Started with grassroots, absolutely.
Well, Kathy Richard, before we get back into talking what, you know, one of our main focuses is, focus is today, you have a really interesting history in that, you know, because one of the things I want to come back and talk with you and Renee about is so much of the work that you do with our working artists, you know, that are here throughout the state and especially in our Acadiana region. But you hail from
Gaydon.
Yeah, from Gaydon. And you're a resident of Abbeville.
Yes.
But you, your introduction to a lot of events and people and places around here was as an artist, would you say?
I think it started as an artist, but I actually was married to a musician at one time. So I knew a lot of musicians growing up. Mark Aberry's a fiddle player. Very successful. And so I knew a lot of musicians as I lived in Abbeville and met them. But it was through my my work, you know, designing alligator teeth and jewelry that I met the founders of the New Orleans Musicians Clinic.
Got it.
And I think that's what, it, as Renee said, it was a good fit for me because helping musicians, I knew so many of them, and I had lived the life with them, and I knew their plight. So, but also other artists, because I also suffered from no health insurance. I didn't know where to go.
Yeah.
And when I got sick, I had to learn to weave through that system. And so I always say I was where they are, and I knew what they needed because I needed it myself.
Well, so. How long did you work as an artist? I mean, and you still do some things, but where you were a full-time –
18 years.
18 years as a full-time artist.
Yeah.
And just for people that aren't aware of who you are but aren't – who may know you but don't know that part of your life, how did you get into doing the alligator jewelry?
And you did
a lot of traditional folk pieces that you used alligator for too.
I started off with that. I went to USL. I was a photography major, and I went on an alligator hunt to photograph it. And they'd never had a woman on a hunt before, and you know they were always because I grew up with brothers. I mean, you know, I'm good. I'm outdoors. And so the day we went, they got like 8 alligators, and they were so excited. They said, "Oh man, I was their good luck charm." And so would I come again? So I spent like 2 or 3 days with them, and at the end, they presented me with this large alligator head as a joke, you know. And I guess they expected me to, oh, you know. And I was like, "Oh, cool, yay!" You know. So I did what they said. I buried it, you know, and took the teeth out and started making jewelry for myself and for friends. And my best friend Jennifer.
And let me ask you a question though. But you bury it.
I was about to say the same thing. I'm ignorant to that.
Yeah, no, you bury it something for like the ants to work with it.
Yes. Well, if you put it on an ant pile, it's going to really smell.
Right. Yeah.
So if you bury it, you know, you don't have the smell, and you get the decomposition is really what you have to have. Because the reason alligator skin makes such good luggage is because it's so durable. So it has to decompose for you to be able to do anything, you know. And once it does, the alligator head literally falls into hundreds of pieces. And so then you can take the teeth out and create things with them.
And there was the whole thing, too, that I know you used to do with the with the jawbone that was used for knives, right? Was that the jawbone?
Uh-huh. Well, I had all these pieces of alligator bones, you know, because, again, it falls into hundreds of pieces. And so I was filling up the holes in my yard because I had all these pieces of bone. And, you know, what are you going to do with them? And I ran over it with my car one day, you know, and it slipped my tire, literally. And I was talking to an older gentleman, and I told him what happened. He said, well, the Indians actually did make knives out of the jawbones of alligators. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. I could do that. I could do that as well. So
safer
we started
for your tires.
Yeah, it was literally, it is extremely strong. So because, you know, an alligator's jaw has so much compression to, you know, crush things. So I started making letter openers and, you know, knives and things like that. So, but it all came out of different hit and misses.
And you did a lot of different like kind of cultural education programs too. You did
with
for
kids.
This area.
Talk to them about alligators and, you know, where they come from and the different parts, you know, and also made jewelry with the backbones, which is like on top of the alligator have all these bumps.
Yeah.
And what they actually are the solar panels for an alligator. So all the holes have little blood vessels attached to them. And when an alligator lays in the sun, he is literally soaking up the sun.
Kathy, wait, that's a good way to describe that. I've never heard it described that way.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that when he goes under the water later on, you know, the warmth, you know, slowly, but he is really soaking up the sun.
Yeah.
I had a science lesson today.
Yeah.
That's right. I know. For you folks out there who have met with Kathy about healthcare, you had no idea that you were talking to an alligator expert.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
So really strange. But my best friend Jennifer, I would give her gifts because when you're in college, you have no money.
Oh, no, you're broke.
You know, you make
broke.
Jewelry.
Yeah.
And she would literally sell them off her ears. You know, people would say, oh, this is really nice. Where can I get that? Right here. $10.
That's right.
So I kept giving them to her until finally I said, you know what? I might could do this.
Yeah.
And I was working for the Real Superstore. So I quit my job, literally. quit and started doing it and going to shows. And it was a great life for 18, almost 20 years.
Yeah. You know, and you certainly were with the majority in terms of artists out there who live their life without health insurance.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, show to show.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a bad show or a good show. And so, yeah, you know, I really understood what they needed because I was in the same situation myself.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought it was a good way for me to show them how to get into the, you know, at the time, the UMC system, you know, how to qualify, what to do, where to go see a doctor. You know, this is way before the Affordable Care Act. So,
and this is when you first got involved with Healthcare for Musicians out of New Orleans?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And was that organization, Kathy, did that – was that a grassroots organization or was that connected to another – like their funding back at that time and everything. How
there
did
was
they
some
exist?
Funding, but it was grassroots. It was literally Jeannie Salas, Jeannie Daigle.
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah.
And Becca Begno, the Musicians Clinic in New Orleans. They wanted to replicate it in Lafayette.
Yeah.
And so, but it was not an offshoot of the clinic in New Orleans. They had to do their own, you know, and that's how I got
started. And
that started.
Was connected some through SwallowHack.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Initially?
Which is
okay.
Where Renee and I met. We were okay. Co-workers there together.
Yeah, okay.
So working with the Healthcare for Musicians, I started there. And when funding ran out, the Louisiana Cultural Economy Foundation was looking to expand what they did. And at the same time, while I love musicians, I was always saying, how can we help other artists?
Sure.
How can we help visual artists and culinary and literary and theatrical?
Yeah.
And so that is exactly what they were looking to do. So it was a perfect fit for me to move into to that. And not only move from Acadiana, but to do it statewide.
Very nice.
So that was great for me.
Very cool. Well, let's take a short break, and we're going to listen to something by Chubby Cecil. Chubby Carrier is a musician.
Absolutely.
Who
one
has
of
been
our
involved with
biggest
with you
supporters.
Folks. And how did Chubby get involved?
We started with, of course, the other musician. I think it was like Chicken and Egg, David Egan.
Yeah.
Started, and Chubby, when he heard about it, was, you know, quick to come on board because he played with his father at a very young age and suffered from secondhand smoke and knew the difficulties, lost his father to it. So he was, you know, eager to come on board and what can I do and how can I do it? And yes, one of our biggest advocates.
Very nice. Well, this is Chubby Carrier. This is live from Knuckleheads, and it's Tous les temps sont temps.
Welcome to the party, my Zydeco brothers and sisters. Thank y'all for coming. Let's get it on. Tous les temps sont temps.
Chubby Carrier, and that's from Live at Knuckleheads, and that's Tous les temps sont temps. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange. My guest today in the studio, Renee Stansberry, who is our regional director, and we're thankful for that, with the Louisiana Campaign for Tobacco-Free Living. And Kathy Richard, who has always, for quite a few years now, had a strong focus on health care for artists. Initially starting with the Healthcare for Musicians program through the Louisiana Cultural Economy Foundation, and something that's dear to her heart, too, because she was a working artist for years. So the two of you, you started working together, Kathy, when you came on with healthcare.
She was working with a program at Swallowheck called MED.
InfraMed.
And can you tell people what Swallowheck is for those who aren't familiar with it?
It's the Southwest Louisiana Area Health Education Center.
Yeah.
So the Swallowheck acronym is much shorter than the long name.
Sure, yeah.
But we had the same director, so we were co-workers together in the same wellness department. I was with Healthcare for Musicians, and we had a good time. We learned a lot together under our director, and then I left to go to LCEF, and she remained at Swallowheck right up until she took her job with TFL. So,
yeah,
been there a while.
Yeah, I was there almost 10 years, because I was in the other programs before I was in tobacco. And AHEC is one of the nonprofit. It's a nonprofit agency. There's actually three other AHECs in the state. So AHECs are actually nationally. They're in other states. Ours in the Southwest area was developed around a lot of health care and health initiatives, but the core programs of the AHECs is mentoring young children, like a day with a doc, AHEC of a summer. They get to experience health care careers and encourage them to pursue those. And so that's kind of what all of the AHECs across the nation do. But Southwest kind of diversified and branched out and did a lot of healthcare programs such as Healthcare for Musicians, InfraMed, and other programs such as that. So that's kind of how we got started together. We actually shared the same office too.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, and who knew then you'd be so focused on what you're doing right now, you know?
So, or working back together.
I know when Renee got the job, it was like, all right, you know, teams back together.
That's right.
The band's back together.
Yeah. So when the focus, Kathy, with healthcare for musicians, and it was that focus on musicians, was the reason for that instead of artists as a whole was just because of where the work setting or the work settings were?
Well, there was a grant available with Tobacco-Free Living. I started with that in 2010. There was a grant available for what they called service industry workers. So it was a perfect fit for us because our musicians are service industry workers in a place that they have an unhealthy work environment. So that became our focus of trying to get, working with TFL to get smoke-free workplaces for them. And a lot of people don't think they quite understand that this is where they work. I mean, a great majority of the listeners out there right now, they're not smoking in their workplace right now. But when our musicians and our wait staff go to work, it's in a smoking environment.
But they make that choice. I'm playing devil, you know.
I know you are.
I mean,
understand.
I'm sure you've heard that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I say that if all of our musicians across the country that did not want to play in a smoking environment, quit playing music, it would be a silent world.
That's right.
You know, so yes, they, you know, you say they have a choice, you know, you as
I would like to
people.
Say I don't believe
no, I get
but,
that.
But
you
I do
as,
know, yeah.
As, you know, the people at large that say that, you know, they can't always get a job. Chubby's a Grammy winner, and I know there are times when he has to play in a smoking environment. So they don't always have a choice, you know. And kind of speaking of that, it's R.J. Reynolds, you know, is a tobacco company, everybody knows. And they just changed their workplace policy. They are now a smoke-free environment. So a tobacco company has decided that it's the right thing to do to not allow all their employees to smoke in their offices. So
yeah, that's right.
This is about health. This is about creating equal air for all. This is about creating the healthier air. everyone has the right to breathe clean air when they go to work,
and
regardless of where they work.
And we didn't know years ago the effects of secondhand smoke, of being around that. I mean, you didn't know.
That's right.
You
know? And the more we learn, the better choices and decisions we can make. It's, you know, someone always compares it to seatbelts. You know, we didn't think 30 years back, 40 years back. I mean, cars weren't even made with seatbelts.
Yeah.
But through the science, through the studies, through the evidence, it's now a law.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of the same way. And again, it's that social norm. It's that perception. You know, it's not glamorous, you know, the health effects from that. It doesn't have to be part of your normal life just because it's been in the past.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to go hand in hand with an alcoholic beverage.
I mean, you think about, you know, for years, you know, through television and through ads and, you know, on shows. I mean, that's what was portrayed.
That's what you saw. Mm-hmm. That's what you were exposed to. So there's a lot of reasoning why ads are placed where they are, why ads are placed in certain magazines, why they're placed in certain neighborhoods. There's evidence to show that there's a lot of studies that they do to entice new customers or, you know.
That whole subliminal advertising too, you know, how that all fits in.
Yeah, and I mean, I think over time, we've done a great job with creating smoke-free environments, really educating the public, changing the mindset that's associated with tobacco use. Unfortunately, a lot of the great things that we have in place, the new products that they come out with kind of counter or try to counter some of those measures that we do.
Such as, Renee, when you talk about some of the new products that are out.
Well, let's just look at the e-cigarette or the vape products that they have.
Yeah.
A lot, we've looked at a lot of the ads and the marketing techniques that they use because over the last 30 years, there's been a lot of restrictions placed on the industry on how and where and when they can really advertise their products.
Yeah.
You know, think back when you were young, you probably saw the Marlboro Man commercial.
That's right. Yeah.
And now you won't be exposed to that. However, these new products, by definition, do not fall under these laws that are there to protect us. And so there has been an increase in vape product usage amongst youth today. You can see kind of the youth tobacco survey that the Department of Health and Hospital puts on during the year. You can look at the BREFIS data, the behavior risk factor surveillance survey that CDC puts out. You can see over time these usage of these products are going up, they're increasing, but they're using a lot of the same tactics that they used in their marketing whenever cigarettes were very popular. They're using some of the same ads. And I like the Louisiana, the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids on their website. They've actually compared and shown the ads of back.
Interesting.
You know, for youth. I mean, heck, at one time it was even Santa Claus was promoting a cigarette. And so now Santa's promoting the e-cigarette. So a lot of the same tactics that they use for that, they did a great comparison of the media that's being done around that.
Yeah. When you look at, you know, the artists and especially, you know, the musicians who are going into the nightclubs or the dance halls, what do you see them having to deal with? Because, I mean, it's not an easy subject matter. It's not an easy thing to do in terms of places becoming smoke-free or for an artist to stand up and say, I will only play in. You know, what do you see artists running into with that, Kathy?
Well, we started
as – 'cause it's tough.
It is tough. And, you know, you know that the places for live music is dwindling. So there's more competition for gigs, and you take a gig where you can.
Yeah.
In Lafayette alone, you know, we've seen a decline in live music venues. There used to be a lot more, but there's a lot less. So musicians have to compete, and they will take a gig wherever they can. You know, they have, you know, respiratory problems, and, you know, there's more than just they stink. when they come out of the places. You know, it's the toxins that make you stink are also in your lungs and things like that. But
well, you know, I think about, and I'm married to a musician. I mean, I think about how many times, like, could you please throw your clothes out on the front porch?
Yeah, right.
You know, and you don't think, though, about some of the lingering effects of what, even though he's not a smoker, what he dealt with.
Absolutely.
You know?
Chubby tells the funny story that when he was a little kid, you know, of course, he was young, playing with his father, and he would get to school the next day, and his eyes were all red, and he was coughing, and the teacher would say, "Are you sick?" You know, and he'd say, "No, I had to play last night." You know, and this is, you know, he didn't say it. He was a little kid to his teacher, but, you know, this is, smoking last night. His eyes were all bloodshot and red, and, you know, and he had to do it every week, you know, because he loves what he does. You know, our musicians, you know, it's a choice, but it's the artist in them that have to come out, and how blessed we are that they are artists.
That's right.
and the culture that we have down here, and we're just working to preserve it.
Yeah.
You know, when we keep saying it's a choice, you know, it's a choice for the smoker too. You can choose not to smoke. I was talking with a former smoker just yesterday, and he expressed to me that when he used to smoke, he wouldn't smoke inside. He would go outside. And, you know, a lot of people, especially college students, where do you make your most money? With your tips. So where are you making tips? Restaurants, bars. You know, everyone kind of had the same fears when the restaurant industry decided, you know, we were going to have our restaurant smoke free. Everybody thought, oh, it's going to hurt business, going to this. Well, revenue shows that it did not.
That's right.
It even increased in some incidents. And so it's the same thing. I mean, you have a choice. You can go outside. That worker behind the bar, they cannot. And just because they have that as their job, why does that make their right any less than anything else?
Sure.
And, you know, it impacted me when we were recently talking. One of the bars that went smoke-free, we were talking with some of the staff. And one of the young girls in there who is a college student turned around and said that she was so happy that they decided to go smoke-free because she didn't have to go home with a headache every night.
Yep.
And so from an employer standpoint, you know, what's happening with your employees? You know, it is affecting their health. They could be out sick. Well, then you're going to lose revenue because you're losing productivity from that one particular employee. So it's a cycle.
Yeah.
So why not? We're not saying that people have to quit. We're just saying, please go outside.
Where you're doing it.
That's it.
That's right. Well, there has been a campaign around the area for quite a while where there were local folks involved in the arts featured on billboards. And David Egan was one of those people who, you know, gosh, I see the billboard. I would see it driving to and from work every day.
I think it's still up.
It is still up.
And have been very supportive. You have a number of musicians who have been supportive of that project and artists. Had you gotten feedback when those big billboards first started?
Well, of course, everyone that were on, we got feedback in that it was courageous of them to step up, you know. For them, it's not courage, it's just, you know, what they believe in.
Sure.
But we have a lot of musicians who are a little bit afraid of stepping up and saying they are supportive. They are supportive. But a lot of them, we ran into that in New Orleans because I worked with the musicians in New Orleans, that their agents would even not really allow them to let us use their name for fear of reprisal of venues that wouldn't book them anymore.
Yeah.
But they would say, you know, we really want this to happen. You know, we just can't use my name, but yes, please.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, you get stuck in the middle because you know you've got to pay rent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. So, and as are a lot of club owners.
Yeah.
They are highly supportive and they say, yes, we really want this, but we can't step up and say we want it.
Yeah.
So we have numerous people. And so at that point, we ask them, just call your councilman and tell them that you are.
Exactly.
You know, we're not asking you to step up to the city council meeting and show your, you know, but those behind the scenes making the calls to let them know, your legislators know, that you are supportive and you want it to happen.
Yeah, that really helps. Well, we're going to take a short break and we're going to listen. We were just talking about David Egan.
Oh, let me some David Egan.
Yeah, this is from his CD, 20 Years of Trouble, and this is Beg, Borrow, and Steal. Right, that was David Egan, and that was Beg, Borrow, and Steal from 20 Years of Trouble. And if you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. We are a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette right here at Cypress Lake Studios. And always a tip of the hat to everybody in this area, the Lake Charles area, who continue to support what we do here at this station. You can always go to the website, and up in the right-hand corner, there's a red button where you can continue to support us. It is a secure site. My guests in the studio today, we are talking about smoke-free and tobacco-free living. My guests are our regional director for Louisiana Campaign of Tobacco-Free Living, Renee Stansberry, and with the Louisiana Cultural Economy Foundation and Healthcare for Musicians and Artists, and an artist in her own right, Kathy Richard. You laugh when I say that because you are an artist. And
I know. My husband, as you know, is a leather artist.
That's
he made
right.
saddles, and I used to tell him
it's
he was an artist all the time. And he would laugh, so I shouldn't do that because he was a great leather artist. He is retired now, but
he did all the great saddles and
he
all
did,
that too,
and made handmade whips and yeah, some great stuff.
Very nice. But I always like to mention that for you, Kath, because that is a personal connection you have to this whole issue, too, you know, having been a working artist for all those years. But tonight there is a meeting with Lafayette Consolidated Government with their council meeting where you do have an ordinance that's up for tonight. Can you tell us a little bit about that for folks that may have just joined us
Sure.
later in the program?
It's at 5:30 at the Lafayette Consolidated Government Building. It's at 705 West University. And there is a smoke-free ordinance that Councilman Boudreaux has put before. Tonight is the vote. It was introduced on May 5th. And so we're just asking supporters of the ordinance to come out.
And the ordinance is for bars and club to go.
Bars and gaming facilities and just some other ins and outs.
Within Lafayette Parish.
Yes.
Okay.
It's in the city of Lafayette.
Okay, within the city limits.
And then
okay.
the unincorporated areas of the parish.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Very nice. There's a program that you mentioned early on, Renee, where you talked about cessation.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that – because it's not an easy thing to do. It's cigarettes
not.
Are very, very addictive. Chew, which I think a lot of people forget about, is very addictive.
Absolutely. And sometimes quitting spit tobacco is a little bit more challenging because a cigarette user will take about 10 puffs off of one cigarette and then they'll put it out. They may come back to it an hour later, a couple of hours later, depending on how much they smoke. Whereas a spit tobacco user, have you ever seen them put a dip in their mouth? They're not being able to measure how much nicotine or other chemicals that are in that pinch that they're
yeah.
putting in. And they may leave it 30 minutes, an hour. And so the mouth lining is constantly absorbing those chemicals and the nicotine that's in the product.
Yeah.
So they really it's an oral fixation. They like to have something in their mouth.
I mean, you look at the baseball industry.
Absolutely.
You know? And, I mean, there's been some change with that,
Absolutely.
Too.
Some of the leagues and have went tobacco-free
mm-hmm.
and no longer allow them to have the tobacco products because they realize young children are looking up to them.
Yeah.
So they have done a great job as far as that. And I actually had a dentist tell me because we – and throughout Allen Parish, through some of our efforts, we used to do some screenings for high school baseball teams or youth. And we did a few community screenings. We actually found some leukoplakia in an individual's mouth through some of the screenings that we've done. And, you know, he told me – he said if – spit tobacco users saw the tissue change that occurred on the inside of their mouth anywhere else on their body, they would immediately seek attention and want that tissue removed. But because it's in the mouth, they downplay the risk associated with it.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, they may not have any trouble with cavities or gum disease or anything like that till around their 30s or 40s. And then all the problems that didn't happen are now compounding. And so they'll have more problems the older they get from the usage of it than when they did in their younger years.
Wow. So somebody wants to get help. There are programs mm-hmm. that are available.
Absolutely. We've been very fortunate here in our state with the resources that have been put towards cessation. There's a phone number called – it's 1-800-QUIT-NOW, and it's 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Anyone in our state 13 years or older can call and sign up to get help through that line. If they do call and get phone counseling through this service, they can qualify for up to 2 weeks of free nicotine replacement therapy like patches or the gum.
Yeah.
So if they sign up and call and get assistance through there, they can get that's one way that they can get counseling and medication. Because when you do counseling and medication together, you have a 4 times greater success rate long term
yeah.
To stay quit.
Yeah.
There's also the trust services that we have here in our state. And
when you say the trust services, mm-hmm. what is that?
It was a lawsuit that occurred here in our state against the tobacco industry. So our state got funds that was set up into a trust account, and it's strictly to go to pay for cessation counseling and medication for our residents who began smoking before September 1st, 1988. So really anyone about 35 years or older can qualify through the trust services. Now, through the trust services, it opens up a new world of opportunity for them to get help with quitting. They can get physician counseling face-to-face or other programs here. It's completely paid for. Then after they go through the intake process, they'll receive a medication or prescription card. They can then use that and go to the pharmacy and get free medications to help them quit, either the patches, the gum, the lozenge, or they can get script medication the counter. And again, it's all free. And I believe if they go to www.quitwithusla.org, again, that website is www.quitwithusla.org. There's a key on there, and they can click on and be linked directly to the trust services.
Interesting.
Okay. And they can go through the application process because you do have to fill out an application. A judge reviews it and then accepts you into the program, and then that's when you'll get your paperwork and your information. And I believe you can – it's 2 attempts per year and 180 days per quit attempt. So, I mean, it's pretty good. Because I just want to encourage tobacco users, you know, don't give up the first time. If you've tried to quit, try again.
Yeah.
Sometimes the statistics show it'll take 8 to 10 times before you're successful long term. You know, I myself am a former smoker. I smoked for years off and on, and I've been smoke free for over 10 years now.
Yeah.
So.
Good for you. Good for you. Kathy, in the programs that you're involved with, through Louisiana Cultural Economy Foundation, through healthcare. How would somebody have contact with you regarding this issue?
They can go to culturaleconomy.org and find my phone number, email addresses, everything to reach out to me. I'm very accessible.
Yeah. You're out there a lot.
Yes,
at events.
I am. But, they can find my cell number rather than giving it over the radio.
Sure.
They just go to cultureleconomy.org. They can find my contact information and reach out to me, and I will help them. And also through the Affordable Care Act, there is if you are on the Affordable Care Act, there is opportunities to get cessation information through your policy and great resources, like you said, across the state. So. If you want to quit, and there's a lot of things to help you, definitely.
Yeah, very cool.
And if you want to go out somewhere in our state but not sure maybe where a smoke-free venue is, maybe if you go out in a town or city that doesn't have a smoke-free ordinance in place, they can go to healthierairforall.org, and that's healthierairforall.org, and they can find out what cities are smoke-free, and they can also find out what venues are in the area that are smoke-free.
Very good. Well, you were also mentioning earlier, talking about some of the younger musicians. Wayne Singleton, who a lot of people know as Lil Wayne, same old two-step, his band has gotten very involved in just getting healthier overall now.
He and his band are prime examples of our new young musicians coming up, that they really care about their health. They're more health conscious about what they eat, what they do, working out. And Wayne and Brandon have really led the way in getting their band members healthier, you know, more responsive to what's happening to them and their environment, their work environment. So they are quite supportive of the movement, but also just supportive of being healthy, period.
You know, he's an interesting young man in that he's just aware overall of his community and the
Absolutely.
People that live there. You know, he in St. Landry Parish and in the Opelousas area, you know, he does drive bus for the school system. Mm-hmm. And he approached board I sat on with United Way, he approached us and said, you know, I watch those kids every day. I know what they have and what they don't have. And here's what I'd like to
wow.
do. And so he started this, I mean, it was some years ago, he started this great fundraiser for, you know, back to school, for, you know, getting the supplies that he knows, you know, that kids don't have. So his band participates. He gets a lot of his buddies who play to come in and participate. But, you know, that is a young person who really pays attention to what goes on in that community he
Absolutely.
Lives in. You know? That's nice to hear about them getting, involved in taking care of. Because, you know, being on the road, too, that's a tough place to be. Now, it's getting easier, I think, in terms of choices that traveling artists and musicians have available to them.
Especially late at night. I mean, you know, you think about they're coming back from a gig late at night. You know, what's open? McDonald's. You know, a lot of fast food places there. But they are starting to, you know, bring their own food a little bit more.
That's
and
right.
trying to get the food ahead of time or bring it with them. And I hear all the time, you know, well, all musicians smoke. You know, that's not true. That's not true at all. And while we do have some musicians who do smoke who are still supportive, they may smoke, but they still don't want to take in all of that air when they sing or they play their instruments. They, you know, it's... for every half hour that a musician plays in a smoking environment, they themselves have smoked a cigarette.
Yeah.
So you multiply that times a three-hour gig, that's six cigarettes.
Well, yeah, and you know, and I think, too, something, Renee, that you had mentioned earlier with, I mean, I look at my father-in-law was a musician, too. He was a fiddle player. And Hadley had a hard time, you know, as he was getting older, it was really hard for him to go play in clubs where there was a lot of cigarette smoke, yet... you know, that's something that had been going on for a long time and his body had been, you know, taking in that cigarette smoke, you know. And as we get older, we just, you don't have the same things you did when you were younger to combat and to just kind of keep moving along health-wise.
Yeah, I mean, your body changes the older you get. I mean, that's why working out and eating healthy is so important. But the air that you breathe is just as important. You know, she was talking about Brandon and Wayne and, you know, it is tough sometimes to play in those smoky venues. But again, it's what they love. It's their passion. It's their job. It's, you know, it's what they do.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's how they make a living.
Yeah,
it is.
It's how they pay their house payment.
Yeah, and it's time we, you know, protect their health. I always use the comparison. You know, when someone has needs to raise, you talking about a fundraiser, you know, who do we call? Our musicians.
That's
so
right.
We call on them for help. Why can't we help them and protect their health?
That's right. Well, tonight you can go to Lafayette Consolidated Government at 5:30 and help Renee Stansberry, who's been my guest, with Louisiana Campaign for Tobacco-Free Living, and Kathy Richard with Healthcare for Artists and Musicians with Louisiana Cultural Economy Foundation. You guys, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
We were talking about
us.
Lil Wayne. This is Lil Wayne Singleton with Roy, which was a song by Roy Carrier. Have a good week, everyone.
Thanks.
écoutez Francomix avec Val.
C'est tous les jeudis soirs à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
Et c'est formidable.
Oh! Oh!
You don't need a stamp on your passport to enter the world and culture of jazz. I'm DeJama Gagne, the producer of Passport to Modern Jazz, Tuesdays at 10 p.m. here at KRVS. I'm going to walk you through the gate into the sounds, the concept of New Orleans jazz, swing, bebop, hard bop, free funk fusions, and, of course, Hammond B3. Many of the best jazz musicians are from right here in South Louisiana.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles. Online at KRVS.